We've all heard of the California Gold Rush of 1848 to 1855, when the discovery of gold brought hundreds of thousands of settlers to California in the hopes of striking it rich. In the late 1860s, the idea of setting off to the frontier for financial opportunity was part of the U.S. zeitgeist. And so were the failures of most of those settlers to strike it rich. There were those who wanted the opportunity, but who were more cautious and wary of the promises of get-rich-quick schemes on the frontier. The perfect antidote to that caution was a fortune to be made in Florida, with oranges. It would be work, yes, but there were riches for the taking. Despite the little freezes in the 1880s, books and pamphlets on the subject of citrus brimmed with enthusiasm. And Helen Harcourt's Florida Fruits and How to Raise Them, published in 1886, she says that no one who owns an orange grove at the present day will live to see its decay. And she draws a parallel to gold. The fame of oranges, she says, is not built upon a sandy foundation, but upon a gold-bearing rock, and such it shall stand forevermore. Like gold, it could make you rich, but she and other promoters of citrus argued that unlike gold, oranges were a stable, steady income. The Reverend T.W. Moore's 1881 handbook on oranges touts enormous dividends on the very first page. He says, "When compared to the profit from other kinds of business, that derived from orange growers is so large that a statement of facts is often withheld because the truth seems fabulous to those who have only had experience with other kinds of fruit." What both these sources and many of the promotional pamphlets and articles of the day had in common are reassurances to objections any orange investor might have, with tales of fantastic earnings sprinkled in between. Orange fever, by the 1880s, was so publicized that some investors believed they might be too late, or that all the farmers would glut the market so much that the prices would fall. These books mixed practical tips and marketing for a farmer new to the business, and while they could be useful, there was a bit of self-interest on the part of some of the writers, even if their business wasn't land speculation. More people coming to grow meant more land sold, which would up their own property values and bring more money to the area. And like most folks on the edge of a financial bubble, they really did believe that the good times were never going to end. If you lived in a big city, like New York or Philadelphia or Chicago in the 1880s, chances were you'd seen one of Henry Addison DeLand's ads or stories about DeLand, Florida. He was advertising in about 90 papers and magazines, and he asked visiting friends to write articles in their home papers. Henry DeLand had orange lands and plenty of them to sell, and more than that, he guaranteed to back your purchase. As sunny as the 1880s orange fever promotional articles and pamphlets were, news had reached the northern states about a series of little freezes in the 1800s and a particularly hard freeze in 1886. For the savvy businessman looking for a flaw in something that seemed too good to be true, the news of these freezes put a bit of a damper on orange fever, and more cautious investors shied away. DeLand hoped that his promise of backing would be enough to bring good men to his county and the city named after him. But, of course, it couldn't last. Late 1894 and early 1895 brought a series of devastating freezes, killing many groves to the ground. By this time, the commercial business had grown up quite a bit since the colder freeze of 1835 and the smaller freezes in the 1880s. A far greater number of growers felt the economic impact of the disaster. Since so many had been told that oranges were a sure investment, plenty of these folks had sunk their entire farms and fortunes into their grove. The freeze was bad enough that there are accounts of growers all over the state, after seeing the damage, just getting up from breakfast, leaving the meal on the table, locking the doors, and never coming back again. Other accounts speak of the freeze being so bad that fixing breakfast wasn't possible, because the eggs were frozen solid. The freezes of 1894-95 broke Henry DeLand financially, as he sought to pay back those groves he'd guaranteed. But he, like a lot of farmers in the state, did start over. The freezes didn't just kill the majority of orange trees in northeast Florida. It also froze the winter tourism market and the land speculation that came with it. The death of citrus made property values plummet, but Florida recovered. By the late 1920s, the average yearly orange crop of Volusia County was reportedly well over 1 million boxes, of which a good portion was sent out from DeLand, Florida. By this time, land speculation all over the state was on the uptick, and most of the orange growing in Florida had shifted south, from North Florida to Central Florida and beyond. Thanks for joining me.